right, folks, you are listening to the Ishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world, and you're part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome to a wonderful show. We have both Rabbi Mike Foyer and the much-anticipated return of Malka Fleischer on the show, so stay tuned for that part. And at the end of that part with Malka, I talk about that I'm asking you to do one thing. I'm asking you to say L'chaim Yerushalayim. I want you to raise your glasses, and on this Jerusalem Day, say L'chaim Yerushalayim. To the rebirth of Jerusalem, to the liberation of Jerusalem, to the reunification of Jerusalem. Just raise your glass and really let's get excited about this amazing time. And let's start with Rabbi Mike Foyer, where him and I discuss the original Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day, which was when the Babylonians kicked us out of Jerusalem, destroyed us. So there's a psalm dedicated to that. We'll talk about that with Rabbi Mike Foyer. So here we go, and don't forget to stay tuned for Malka Fleischer right after that. All right, folks, you are listening to the Ishai Fleischer Show here on Facebook, YouTube, and the Land of Israel Network. And let us get ready together for Yom Yerushalayim. Maybe one could argue one of the holiest days and one of the most important days on the Jewish calendar, because maybe it fuses a sense of, on the one hand, nationalism, the capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem, the remembrance of a war, the Six-Day War, which is a nationalistic moment of the modern state of Israel, but with the yearnings of more than 2,000 years, and therefore a religious sense to it all. And I guess folks that are self-described as religious Zionists feel like, for them, the greatest of days, something like a type of Yom Kippur, where here's the holiest day on the calendar, here's Jerusalem Day, where it fuses, on the one hand, modern nationalism, the rebirth of the Jewish state and land of Israel, but with holy yearnings for a third temple. So let's get ready for Yom Yerushalayim. And we have with us, of course, our beloved Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the program.
Oh, I feel so good. You called me beloved.
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, Isha. How are you doing?
I feel good. I guess I'm feeling beloved because we are about to discuss Yom Yerushalayim, as I put up here on the screen, Jerusalem Day. Just to make it clear for people what we're talking about, Jerusalem Day is a day, it's a modern holiday, if you will. It's remembering the victory of the Jewish people of Israel in the 1967 Six-Day War, which, by the way, you're covering on your other show right now, the intro to, on your other show called The Jewish Story. Let me bring it up.
I'm in deep, man. I'm in deep. It's so complicated to try to keep up all the threads.
Right. In fact, your last show, I would say, was very, very packed full of information. And I had to listen to it twice, actually, in order to kind of get through the different threads. If the threads are the Cold War, which people oftentimes, when you think about Jerusalem Day, you're not thinking so much of the Cold War, but the Cold War was 100% a Six-Day War event. And even more so, and even more so in the following war, which is the Yom Kippur War, which was truly a Cold War battle where actually the various superpowers were going to arm not puppet war. What's it called?
States. It's a proxy war.
Proxy war. That's exactly
the phrase you're looking for.
Right. So that was definitely something that happened during the Six-Day War as well. But Yom Yerushalayim, while it's a modern holiday, also has an ancient root. And I wanted to bring up a psalm for a second here. Let me remember how to screen share on this thing. And I just wanted to bring a psalm into our reading. And this is Psalm 137, which says, I'll read in the Hebrew and we'll translate together. It's very famous. It's really one of the most famous of all psalms. It says, Al Neharot Bavel, by the rivers of Babylon, Sham Yashavnu Gam Bechinu. We sat down, yea, we wept. Why? Bezachreinu Tzion. We remembered that we were taken out of Zion. We remembered Zion. Al Aravim Betucha Talinu Kinureinu. Upon the willows in the midst thereof, we hanged our harps. Kisham Shalunu Shoveinu. For there, our captives asked us, Divrei Shir. Why don't you sing a song? Vetoleleinu Simcha. And our tormentors asked us to mirth. They said, Shir ulanu mishir tzion, sing to us of the songs of Zion. It's like Samson, like, bring Samson out, let him, like, play before us. We can laugh at how we've blinded Samson. We can laugh at you and how you used to have nice songs about Zion. It's a very poignant image. Echna shirat shir Hashem. but we ask, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? And then more personally, if I forget thee, Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. Let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I don't remember you, if I don't remember, if I don't put Jerusalem above on the tops of my joys. Okay. Now here's an important thing. Zchor Hashem.
Here's the less PC part.
Right. Zchor Hashem, remember Hashem, livnei Edom, remember the children of Edom, et Yom Yerushalayim, the day of Jerusalem. And the reason I'm bringing this out is to show that indeed Jerusalem Day is a very ancient concept. Who said? They said that these Babylonians, aru aru, raise it, ada yesod ba, until its foundation, destroy it till its very foundation. Bad bavel ashduda, O daughter of Babylon. That is, the translation here is destroyed, but I think there's a different way to translate it, right?
No, shduda? No, that's what it means.
I feel like shduda also means, like in a modern terminology, it means like bankrupt. Like
Shoded is a brigand or someone who sort of like forcibly robs others. So,
right.
You know, it's not just generally destroyed. You've been emptied out.
Right. Ashrei sheyishalem lach et gmulech shegamalt lanu. Happy shall he be, he that repayeth you what you have done to us. He who avenges what you've done to us. And here's the trick, right?
Biblical image here.
Right. Ashrei, happy shall he be, sheyochaz, that will hold onto venipetz et olalaych ala sela, and dashes or destroys or smashes your little ones et olalaych ala sela, upon the rock. So yeah. Takes your babies and smashes them ostensibly.
Yeah.
But you know, I have a different explanation for this, which I think works maybe better, which is olalaych also comes from the word alila, which is the tale, the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Happy is he who takes your narrative, your fake story, and smashes it on the rock, right? It's an alila. It's an alila. Mm-hmm. You have a fake story about us, that you've destroyed us, that you've replaced us, the various replacement theologies. There's replacement theology in their Christianity. There's replacement theology under Islam. And I think today there's something called replacement narrative under the Palestinian story. And
I would also argue that secular Western humanism in many ways has a replacement element in the way in which we sort of as a people fit their narrative.
Right.
That's, so
blessed is he who takes your narrative and smashes it.
I mean, it's certainly more pleasant. Although I wouldn't shy away from the fact that that one has to see a thing for its roots as well. The Bible's culture is a culture of real struggle, and where people's destroyed each other. And today, what I hear and what you're pointing out is that oftentimes, because thank God we've sort of like left a culture. Most of us, not all of us, left a culture where you would smash the heads of babies to destroy them. We think that the world is a better place, but the reality is that you're pointing out that, careful, because the reality is that war is still as total, if it's not as immediately brutal. And so therefore, you know, destroying one's children physically or destroying them sort of spiritually and intellectually through capturing their narrative is also destruction.
Yes. Yes, 100%. It is 100%. An effort of destruction. And I wanted to bring up that psalm just to kind of also show it's interesting that the psalm says Jerusalem Day is the day of its destruction. Jerusalem Day is the day that you guys took us out of the land. Jerusalem Day is the day where we remembered the Jerusalem that was. And today's Jerusalem Day, same name, Yom Yerushalayim, is the Jerusalem where it's like, remember that Jerusalem that was destroyed? We're back.
Yeah, and it poses a deep question in what I hear, because the problem with the sort of like the conflict orientation is that total war demands way more than instinct for survival, right? If you're in a complete war, and by the way, it only takes one side to be in a total war. Because, you know, like if one side's in a total war and the other side's not, that's called defeat, right? So if you're in a total war, you have to be fighting for more than just survival. You have to be fighting for victory. And that vision of what victory is, I'm really struggling with this right now because I was actually writing this morning, this time period that led up to the liberation of Jerusalem was a time period of deep confusion in Am Yisrael.
Right.
Like, what are we trying to do? There's some part of the state of Israel I'm speaking now, although I'd wager it's true for the people of Israel in our dispersion, that there's some part of us that whose willingness to wield power is dependent upon a sense of absolute desperation. We don't want to wield power unless our back's to the wall. Right? What I call the morality of 1948. Like, okay, fine. You know, like, seven Arab nations jump us in the country, so then we'll use power. But as soon as that immediacy of a threat to our existence dissipates, first of all, we begin to undermine and question what it is that we did. And second of all, we show ourselves unwilling to have a vision to wield power in the name of righteousness, justice, heroism, all those things that... And so it's one of the reasons, I think, that Jerusalem Day to this day, sadly, with the exception, as you pointed out, of a very narrow segment of our population, it hasn't caught. It has not caught. I mean, could you imagine such a thing? 2,000 years, Jews have been saying, "Im eshkechech Yerushalayim tishkach yamini." If I forget, 2,000, and they meant it. Suddenly, you got it, and it's like, well, I don't know, because the truth is, it was like a messy, and the consequences. Okay, folks, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that we don't appreciate the reality that when it comes to narrative warfare, there is a place to say, "I'm not just going to wait until you get my back to the wall. I'm going to proactively attempt to shape a world which I believe is reflective of our mission and the divine vision for humanity." And that's what Jerusalem's about.
I think I'm bugged by
it. I spent the whole morning writing about it.
I think there's a tension between mythology and reality. And when you have for 2,000 years a Jerusalem that you dream of, but it becomes mythologized, when you get the real thing, It's shocking. It's surprising. It's messy. It's dirty, and it's also very, very, very. It no longer is in the realm of mythology. Mythology right. can be very high and very, very
pure, clean, morally safe,
right. heavenly. You know, and suddenly it's like I didn't know that. You use the word a lot of times, which is re-embodied. So, a myth is like a soul. And to suddenly throw it back into a human body or throw it back into a Jerusalem, into an actual Jerusalem. And you see that the word Jerusalem and also the word Beit El or Bethel is oftentimes used as a name for synagogues or churches
sure.
or places like that, because people can mythologize that and say, well, this place represents Jerusalem now. To have a real Jerusalem to have a new Yom Yerushalayim, not the old kind of Yom Yerushalayim, is a really tricky moment.
Listen, I don't doubt the trickiness or the complexity. And frankly, I think we're doing fairly well, considering it's only been 50 years since we liberated Jerusalem and it's 2,000 years that we were missing it. Right. I want to just make that clear. At the same time, what you're pushing on is the essential mission of the Jewish people in the world. Myth has no meaning if it can't be lived in physical life. And this is where we parted ways with early Christianity. And to this day, much of the idealist side of Western culture is that ideas lack meaning until they're put into action in the world. And this sort of notion, well, but yeah, you're going to sully the idea by trying to make it real. It's like, okay, but you know what? Well, like that's who we are as a people. That's our definition of faith. That's how we engage God in the world. Right? The Jewish question is not, do you believe in God? The Jewish question is, did you put on tefillin this morning? You know what I'm saying? Like the belief in God is an abstraction. This is a wonderful thing. I don't knock anybody who's a believer. But that's not the Jewish definition of faith. The Jewish definition of faith is, are you faithful to that belief through your actions? In the same way, Im Eshkechech Yerushalayim, our faith to Jerusalem is not a purely, oh, I haven't forgotten, etc. That's why, by the way, how do people fulfill for the last 2,000 years our pledge not to forget Jerusalem?
We break a cup. We say it. We bless Jerusalem in our over our food and over the stuff.
We leave
a corner of our house, right?
Women are meant to wear slightly less jewelry than they otherwise would. I mean, there's a whole list of actions that we do in the world which embody what we're missing. And that's the faithfulness, not just like, oh, Jerusalem. It's like, no, I need to feel it. And it's a challenge. It's been 2,000 years. But the reality is we held on strong enough that when push came to shove against a lot of logical international pressures, etc., right, the leadership of Am Yisrael gathered in the basement of the Knesset, driven by Menachem Begin, as we'll speak about, please God, at some point, said, it's time. It's time. All the logic, all the good reasons not to do this pale in comparison to the pledge that we've been living for 2,000 years.
Right. And yet you pointed out though that a lot of people aren't there yet exactly. They're not seeing that awesome moment. And so, well, I have a theory that the different parts of the state of Israel and the Jewish people celebrate in different ways the same celebration. Yeah. One is Yom HaTzma'ut, which is Independence Day, and that's more of the secular Israelis who really celebrate independence and the rebirth of the state as an entity that gives us the aspect of the state of Israel, which is important there, which is a safe haven from enemies, an army, a mechanism of self-determination, aliyah. So
you have the third temple by the early Zionists,
right?
The early leaders of the state.
But it doesn't have overtly religious connotations.
That's precisely my point. It embodies that whole dream in a concrete, down to earth, like you said, economy, government, army,
right?
A people like any other,
right? A people like any other. But then you have Jerusalem Day. Well, maybe I'll go first to Lag BaOmer. Then you have Lag BaOmer, which is maybe the exact opposite, which is the victory of Torah, of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's Kabbalistic, mystical Torah over the Roman exile of the Jewish people from the land of Israel. It's like, we're back. We're studying our ancient Torah in our land. We beat you. You exiled us. We had to put our... Rabbi Mike, can you hear me now?
I hear you now. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you. That was a weird moment that we had. I think it's just a little hot for all the equipment.
Oh. So,
yeah.
Can I tell you a secret? I like this heat.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. It's quite hot here in the land of Israel. So it is very hot. We are having a super heat wave, which was clearly meant by God to burn out the remnants of the COVID virus. Is that not the answer?
Or just get a good schvitz on.
That's right. So we were saying that the second holiday is the Torah holiday, and the third holiday is the fusion of – maybe you can help me explain that. The third holiday is Yom Yerushalayim, which is the religious Zionist version of it, which is like a fusion of the state on the one hand, but in the Holy Land, specifically with a vision for a national temple.
Yeah, I mean, in that structure, if you're going to say that Yom HaTzma'ut is the elevation of the physical – and even at a certain degree to the expense of the spiritual. I mean, calling the state the third temple, I understand in the sense of the fulfillment of 2,000 years of longing, but it's a failure to understand what the temple actually represents because it's like, you know, we're going to be a people like any other. Meron is an elevation of the soul over, you know, Rome, and it's a denigration of the body. Rome is the body. The Torah is eternal. It's the soul. We're going to be, you know, there with Rabbi Shimon. It's also, by the way, a misunderstanding of the story because, of course, Rabbi Shimon, that was his attitude when he came out of the cave after 12 years. But God sent him back for the 13th to understand the next piece, which is the fact that as Rav Kook teaches, that anyone who breaks the continuity between the physical and the spiritual, who sees them as disparate, is essentially a heretic because what they're doing is they're saying that God thought this was worth creating but not that. Right? That God specifically put us in the world with the ability to take action because that is a sacred act as much as the classically religious soul-oriented acts. So I would say that the vision of temple is a place where the physical is infused and becomes the seat for the spiritual, as not as a disparate element. Which, yeah, listen, by the way, that's where religious Zionism really hangs up. It's kind of a tough sell. And not only a tough sell in the educational standpoint, but it's a very difficult negotiation of values to live. I don't want to slide into politics, but it's one of the places where we've really run into trouble.
I would argue that the reason that we've run into the trouble is we actually didn't go full Monty on it.
Right? Yeah, in what sense?
In truth, if you think about it, at least this is the way I live my life, and it like I always feel very fulfilled from it, and I think other people would be as well, which is it's quite organic. It really works very well together. If you think about it, it's a very full picture. It's like you have the godly promises and they're coming to fruition. Then you built up a state. The state has done these things to move forward the godly process. And it's like, if you think about it, it only doesn't really work if you bifurcate it. If you bifurcate it, then it becomes really kind of like, then you're like, wait a minute, did I steal somebody else's land? Or is this state supposed to be really a state of all its citizens? And you really get confused. Or you're confused from the religious, which is hard for me to understand. But let's say, should I be
saying Hallel on how would you do that with a bracha, without a bracha?
Or the major refrain, which is we're all still in Galus, we're all still in exile. Just the fact that you're geographically in Jerusalem means nothing. It's meaningless because we're all not in a messianic process yet.
I'm sorry that I filter out. I'm just like
okay, but that's a huge amount of people that say that. That's a huge amount of people.
It comes
at the end of the day from the same place, which is a bifurcation of today's reality. And one could also, by the way, Rabbi Mike Foyer, right? A lot of people, you could blame the religious Zionist world for really not bringing a deeper consciousness of the fusion between, and Jerusalem Day is a perfect example. You said it yourself. That fusion has not been bought into by everybody. And one can say, you know what?
We haven't allowed it to really transform us. We're trying to dance at two weddings. This is what I meant, is that as opposed to going, if you said full Monte, I'll go whole hog, as long as we're using very strange expressions to refer to such a sacred thing. You know, instead of going whole hog, We've tried
whole hog Zionism. I like
whole
that.
Hog, yeah, well, that would sell in very particular places. The
full Monty Zionism.
I got that it. Even less okay. So. But fortunately, most people don't know what that actually means.
See the movie.
Yeah, or just Google it now. So come on, focusing here, people. So the reality is that for many of us, the challenge is religious, because the reality is that the way we know how to live Torah in the world is a product of exile. It's an organic product, meaning it's an evolution from the roots of the first temple, the second temples, all the way back to Sinai. But it's form, it's, you know, sort of the phenotype, if you will, the form it's taking the world, was formed in exile. How much do we really let ourselves go into that organic process of continuing to reform? Very little, right? That's one side. The other side is that historically, at least, religious Zionism hasn't put forward a vision of how to structure and run our country, right? It's always been satisfied to be a bit player. And you're seeing, by the way, that bill came due quite clearly in the recent coalition negotiations, where Netanyahu basically said, oh yeah, well, I can do it without you. I got other bit players. They're easier to deal with. And of course, he historically always likes to be the most right-wing member of his government. You know, and so here you go. Where are they now? So there's a lack of full acceptance. And part of that is like, because it's kind of hard to really, like, really, Mike, you really believe that that we're going to transform human consciousness, restructure the globe, and finally usher in the dawn of sort of messianic harmony that we've been dreaming about? Yeah, you know, I do. Like, or we're all going to just see the other vision of the Messiah. Which, not forget that our sages also see 1,000 years of peace when the planet gets to rest, because humanity isn't troubling it any longer. Because that's what I see at this point. So we've reached a point in human history where the planet will survive. It's always important to remember people. We're going to destroy the planet. We're not going to destroy the planet. We're going to destroy the planet. We're destroy ourselves. Planet's going to survive. It might be a little bit less beautiful than we came, Lutzari Arav, but it ain't going anywhere. We, on the other hand, have no such promise. Right? And so, we're at a point in human history. Forget my messianic religious notions. Just read the papers. Look at the science. The opportunities and the dangers that we face today, and the COVID was a great wake-up call. Hey, folks, one planet. Hey, folks, some guy in China eats a bat. You've seen that meme floating around? Anybody who believes one person can't change the world has never eaten a live bat, right? Like, it's a little bit sick, but you see the point, right? Like, hey, folks, like, we could do this or we could do the other thing.
Well, speaking of doing things, and you also mentioned Netanyahu, we are actually in yet a latter part of the Six-Day War is still being fought now over the issue of sovereignty, which is really asserting sovereignty, or what the detractors call annexation, of those lands that were liberated in the Six-Day War.
Absolutely.
So it's still being fought.
Although that was the point, if you've been listening to the show, that was the point I made right at the beginning, is that where you say a war begins and where you say it ends actually tells you what you think it was about. Because what you just pointed out with quoting Psalm 137 is that the Six-Day War began when the temple was destroyed and we were driven from our land. Because we were on an inevitable arc back to our home. Right? And so then to think that it ended when, you know, Harabai Biadenu and the paratroopers entered Yerushalayim is a deep mistake. And then, of course, you look at the last 50 years, because we have failed to appreciate the challenge to the entire structure of human society, at least Western society, frankly, the challenge to the structure of Western society that is represented by us returning to our home. Notice the threats to Edom in that poem, right? Since we failed to appreciate that, we haven't done the work to sell it to our own people, to educate, forget selling it, to educate people. And by the way, this is the last piece, is we don't appreciate the demand it's making of us. The demand, not to forget anymore, Im Eshkechei Yerushalayim is not sufficient. We have to remember.
That's what I'm saying. You got good at remembering the past. You got good at crying over it.
You got good at not forgetting. Remembering. Right. Is a much more active stance.
Right. Well, the good news is that there is a organic movement in the right direction, generally speaking. I would liken our time to when Joshua came in with the Jewish people to the land of Israel. They set up a tabernacle. The tabernacle was the synagogue, the mini temple of the time. It wasn't the full thing. It wasn't the final thing. They were used to a tabernacle in the desert. That's what they knew. That's what the Torah told them to do. That's what they knew. To set up a temple, it took a big leap. That leap was not done by the judges or the early prophets. It wasn't done by Joshua. And it wasn't even exactly finally done by King David, although King David is the one who is that great transition. And then he transitioned the whole story from a tabernacle to a temple. He was able to make that transition between diaspora Jewry fully, even though they had been there for a few hundred years, from that to a temple consciousness, a centralized Jewish people in the land of Israel. In many ways, we've leapfrogged their experience because we jumped right back to Jerusalem. We didn't go Or maybe you could say that on the other hand, the Tel Aviv thing is a little bit like because in Israel, Tel Aviv is considered the spiritual and economic, not spiritual, cultural and economic head of the country, the center. But we have leapfrogged it. By the way, there is a move right now to move more government offices to Jerusalem. They've moved more media back to Jerusalem. A lot of the media outlets are actually moving to say from Yerushalayim, that they're broadcasting from Yerushalayim. So there is definitely a movement in the right direction. But it's still the period of the tabernacle before the temple.
So I'm gonna hone in on your metaphor. I'd say we're not in the time of Joshua, we're in the time of the judges. Right. I remember I once asked one of my teachers, like, how could it be that you read Joshua and there's this like very almost idealistic picture of the conquest that's presented? We came in, we kick butt, 31 kings, boom, let's set up camp. And then you like turn the page to look at Judges, it's like, whoa, the Canaanites are everywhere. Civil war, we can't seem to even like build on what we got, we can't get more, we can't even hold what we have, and like there's this like chaos. And so I asked him, like, how could that be? And he said, well, you have to appreciate that the spiritual energy it takes for the Jewish people, for Am Yisrael, to reroot ourselves in the land involves a diminishment of our capacity. But once we strike root, so in Joshua, he's like, we came in, and we boom, we drilled in, and then it was, oh, I just want to just like sit under my fig tree and my vine. Very similar to a lot of the portions of our society today. But the reality is that rooting is so deep that once it begins to really give us strength, then the process, of course, is David unites the tribes. And that's the stage that we're at right now, is that how do we begin to craft a vision of peoplehood, of mission, of moving beyond just a Judaism into an Am Yisrael, right? But not an Am Yisrael like a nation like any other, but like really Am Yisrael, right? And craft a vision which can actually bring us together. Because remember, the temple is the expression of that. It's not the driver of it. And that's, by the way, there's a big piece in the sovereignty movement that I would like to see spoken about, which is that I think that because our mission now is no longer local, unlike in the time of David and Solomon, where the model was like, go local and grow, meaning the world wasn't connected. The Chinese never heard of us. In North America, they certainly weren't aware, et cetera, you know. But now it's a global mission. The very fact that stuck in the middle of the question of our sovereignty is a people who claims to be the native populace, right? It poses the question at the heart of our sovereignty, how do we relate to the nations of the world? How do they fit into our story? Something which in exile, we were never particularly interested in dealing with.
Right, right.
Right. And so I think it really behooves us to see.
Well, we were interested in that question, but backwards. We were interested to understand how do we.
Well, because they were the context. Correct. Right,
they were the context.
They were the context.
Right.
They have the Malkuth.
I very much agree with your point. I think it's a very good point. And on Twitter, which is a place I hang out in, no. I find a lot of enemies, but I find a lot of friends out there in the world. I'm in touch with Iranians. I'm in touch with Palestinians, certainly, and Saudis. You know, there's this Saudi blogger, Twitterer.
Right, super persecuted.
And I'm talking about the guy, I think Muhammad Saud, who like sings these songs to Israel. Uh-huh. He's one of the most beautiful folks I've ever seen. And he sings songs in Hebrew in order to kind of, and he's dressed in full Saudi regalia. And
I'd be a lot more comfortable in this heat than what I'm
wearing. Oh yeah. Oh, they know heat. They know heat over there. So, you know, you find a lot of people that are with us, but when it comes to, of course, the question of the people that we administer.
Yep. Who are living right there.
Who are living right here and right there, and just they are part of our landscape. You're totally right that there hasn't been a comfortable. So yesterday I tweeted out a picture of myself at the mechanics. I was at my mechanics, and yeah. My mechanic is a Russian Jew who speaks a pretty darn good Arabic. He's got two, sometimes three Arab workers, and next door is a Moroccan caterer, and he comes in and he makes like coffee in the garage. You know, garage guys. You it's fun to hang out in garages.
Sure.
And he speaks a fluent Arabic.
Yeah,
because he was born in Morocco. The Arabs there and the Russian guy, and they're laughing and they're talking and they're working, and I took a picture of it, and I was just like, this is the Middle East. This is beautiful. This is the place that. You know, and I wrote, don't let the lefties fool you. Hebrew nationalists know coexistence. That's what I wrote. That was the language that I used. And
go ahead. I'm sorry for your thought.
I just, all I mean to say is there's a question of legal standing now that we have to figure out. And I personally believe very much in when I moved to America when I was a kid, I was for many years a resident alien. Many years later, I learned that resident alien is a Torah term, ger toshav.
Yes.
And I feel like we have not developed yet this concept that like ger toshav is a wonderful, beautiful concept. It means that you are a member of the society. It means that we owe you a lot, but you owe back loyalty. And you can have representation in one way or another, but maybe not the ability to drive the Jewish state. but you have a certainly an ability to drive your own destiny with a lot of success. And if you can't muster and handle that amount of loyalty to the Jewish state as an Arab or an other, then you're gonna have to find a place somewhere else. But that's the way I understand it. To me, it's very, again, it's kind of simple. It's kind of simple. You're loyal. You live in the Jewish state. You keep your identity. And if not, then you'll have to find a different place. But
yeah, on that level, it's simple. But one of the problems, and this is where I think that the sovereignty movement needs to actually think bigger, which is that to think that you can find a both moral and workable legal status for the Arabs living in Yudan Shomron without reconsidering the entire structure of our government is a mistake. I mean, if you hear, you listen to the left, the whole rhetoric is like, well, in a democratic society, you can't have second-class citizens, right? Which I'm not like, you know, I have mixed feelings about democracy in general, but you see what it is that's how they seize the conversation. It's like, well, since there's nothing legitimate other than the very specific form of democracy. Remember, democratic society is a lie in the sense that, first of all, we're a republic. All democratic societies today are a republic because of nature of representative democracy, et cetera, which is its own challenge. Second of all, what they really mean is Western liberal egalitarian society, which I'm not necessarily saying is bad or good, but like call it what it is, say what you mean, which is, of course, not so reflective of even many of the people whose status we're questioning right now aren't necessarily sold into the Western liberal, the sort of like cultural package, right? So what we need to begin to think about, because Garrett Toshav is a reflection of the Torah's perspective on how do we deal with the realities of multiple peoples in this land. And remember, the core, even though you spoke about rights, the core of the Torah is, what are the obligations? Like you said, right. What are our obligations to them? What are their obligations to us? And if people aren't willing to fulfill their obligations, they themselves have defined themselves as not part of society. And the problem with the Western discourse of rights is it's like, well, no, but you owe me. You owe me. Like, I have my rights. You have to, that's just not the way the Torah approaches, certainly not the social questions. So I think there needs to be a bigger push saying that the question of how to, with justice and righteousness, and not just, by the way, tailpipe management. Oh, their life won't be so bad. It'll get better economically. Like, no. We have all these social questions within our country, and they all revolve around the problem of rights versus obligations. So we need to build from the bottom up, and the fact that we are committed to a Torah-driven, righteous relationship to the people that are in our land will be a springboard for recreating a society that's actually reflective of the vision. Mm-hmm. You know? And it may sound nuts, but the truth is, we're Jews.
I think it sounds not nuts. I think it sounds totally...
Well, to you, of course, it's not nuts. No,
but even on a very practical level, it sounds normal to me. Like, it doesn't sound tricky to me on a like, it's not like, wow, that's a great ideal. I'm like, I could see that working just fine in my mind's eye anyway.
Don't forget, the world's ideal of government today was created by groups of people who sat around and tried to think about how do we do it better.
Right, right.
So, like, why are we doing that?
Right.
Like, can we sit around and think about how to do it better?
That's such a great point. Sometimes Judaism gets a little bit messed up by that because we have so much tradition and we have so much law and we have so much written that we have so much also energy that keeps going every day that we don't sit back and have a constitutional convention. I if anybody like learns the history of the United States, it was an amazing, complex, and beautiful, and very hotly debated, and a very driven process about how to come
read
up
the Federalist Papers, man. You gotta read the Federalist Papers,
right? And I find that here in our beloved Israel, I don't even find that the intellectual class is even questioning the system of governance that we have, which is, it needs to be questioned.
The intellectual class won't do it. Remember that the reason that it happened in America is because they were still revolutionaries.
Right.
They had broken away. The intellectual class in our society today is wedded to the system of power which exists now. Even the ones who like pride themselves on like, oh, you, nationalist power. In the end of the day, that structure is what gives them the life they want, the freedoms that they value. It'll, you know, it's, so they're too wedded to that structure, even in their opposition to it, to have a real discourse around it. I think it's only a sense of the insanity that, oh yeah, there's a God and we met him at Sinai, and by the way, the universe is an expression of will and not circumstance. It's only that level of stepping out of the picture that at this point is going to allow us to have a real critical eye toward what could be. And I just want to make a comment. When I say insanity, I mean it in a very real and loving way. I mean, just look at me. But I don't want to sound disparaging.
Right. No. And it's the system was created really for when Israel was about 600,000 people. And it's just not meant for a 9 million people big state.
And it was an adoption of the process of the Zionist movement. And by the way, frankly, a bloodless coup in seizing power from the British, as opposed to having the Constitutional Convention. Don't forget that there was supposed to be a Constitutional Convention. It lasted for 2 days, maybe three. And you know what it did at the end? It declared itself the first Knesset, something that it was not elected to do. And there was really only one person, Hillel Cook, who stood up and said, that was a coup. Did anybody else like see those guys? Everyone else was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm a member of Knesset now. That sounds good to me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, well, in some ways, we are victims of our own success, and that success leads to certain bourgeois, and bourgeois leads to not willingness to change. But at the same time, there's going to be a force that brings it along. I thought that the COVID-19 crisis was one that caused people to think a little bit. We'll see how we come out of it. I thought that the last year and a half of Israeli politics being deadlocked and without a government would have caused something. But interestingly enough, we came out with a big government, a very, very big government.
That's
people
laughing.
That's
a kind word. That's a kind word.
It's a bloated government, but maybe a stable one. Maybe a stable one.
Which has benefits.
It certainly does. Stability in itself allows for a lot of good things to happen.
A lot of bad things to continue.
And indeed. I think that's actually Netanyahu's mindset. He's like, let's grow what we can grow, and bad things grow along with that. But that's okay, because
if one wants to look at him, be down the cuff scoot, that's exactly has always been his mantra.
Right.
Put big questions down the line and just build, grow.
Yeah, that's it. That's right.
My argument at this point, though, is that that's no longer a sufficient answer.
Right.
Plus, I have some deep questions about personally where his own ego and need for power play into that.
And we always talk about the transition between the kingdom of Joseph, or the Mashiach of Joseph, which is the creative juice of like building infrastructure, building economy in the Jewish peoples. And then there's like the Davidic messianic process, which is to bring in into the physical structures, the infrastructure that was created, a more spiritual, a deeper, a more to fulfill the mission. What's the word nizgav? How do I say that in English? Like a higher loftier ideal. And this Yom Yerushalayim, I guess we are not there yet. We're not there yet, but we celebrate the process of being on the way, on the road.
That's why all these holidays that you name, Yom Atzmaut, Yom Lag BaOmer, and Yom Yerushalayim, all fall out in the Omer. These are holidays of process and accepting the fact that Sinai aside, there is no product. And even the Sinai, God gave us the Torah and was like, okay, now spend the rest of your history developing Torah Sheval Peh, right? Meaning like it's not an end unto itself. It's the foundation stone of the process of building the world into a vessel that can hold God's presence. That's what we're after.
Rabbi Mike Foyer, I want to wish you a Yom Yerushalayim Sameach, the good kind of Yom Yerushalayim, not the bad kind, right? Is that kind
of
cool?
Don't worry, I'll just say an olive.
Right. But I'm saying like it's amazing that the word Yom Yerushalayim to me anyway means something different 2,000 years later. So I want to wish you a happy Yom Yerushalayim Jerusalem Day. Some people call it Jerusalem Liberation Day or Reunification Day. Other people call it that. But to short Jerusalem Day, I want to recommend everybody visit your website, jewishstory.co, which houses all the stuff that you do, including your counseling, but also the Jewish Story Show, which is also found on the Land of Israel Network, which right now is covering the prelude to the Six-Day War, which is a very powerful thing. Of course, you might want to also mention some of the sources that you use. There are so many important books, including Michael Oren's book, 6 Days of War. And fantastic book. And also one of my favorite books, which is The Prime Ministers.
Yeah.
By Ehud Avner, one of the great books. So folks, check out jewishstory.co. And if you want to see some of the great bottom lines, successes of the Six-Day War, come and visit us at Hebron, hebronfund.org. We'll take you there virtually or in real life, hopefully soon, as we say, next year in person. And so come and visit us. And, of course, help us continue to build Hebron, the Jewish community of, which is only second to Yerushalayim, Eretz Kodesh, but it's the story of the fathers and mothers. And, of course, visit me at yishaifleisher.com, where we're trying to build Israel together, whoever we are, wherever we are, certainly Jews in the diaspora are part of the story. We're all part of the story. Wherever we are, we could take a step forward towards making Jerusalem Day really the big – maybe there'll be yet a third Jerusalem Day, right? There'll be a third year of Yerushalayim.
There will be.
There'll be a third kind of Yom Yerushalayim.
One way or the other.
So happy Yom Yerushalayim and Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi Mike Foyer. Thank you so much for being with me here on the show.
Shabbat Shalom, Yishai. Always a pleasure.
God bless you folks wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Happy Yom Yerushalayim. Happy Yom Yerushalayim, Rabbi Mike.
Happy Yom Yerushalayim.
All right, folks, that was Rabbi Mike Foyer. We're talking about Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day. And I ask you to say L'chaim Yerushalayim. I want you to raise your glass and bless Yerushalayim, but also bless yourself to be part of the great story. Malka Fleischer joins me right now with a lot of energy. So here we go. Here's the Malka Fleischer segment. Shalom, everybody, and welcome back to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it, and I mean it, wherever you are. God bless you. Whatever room in the house you're still locked into, God bless you there. And we love you a lot. I am joined, finally, back by popular demand, almost popular rebellion. I almost had a mob out here with forks and torches saying, we want Malka back. So Malka Fleischer, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
I'm glad to be back.
For honoring me by joining me.
Yes, I can tell how sincerely you feel about what you're saying.
We missed you so much, Malka.
Thanks.
We really missed you on the show. The show is absolute dirt and junk without you. It's just absolute.
Yes, I always thought so. Anyway, your show is so good.
It is, but
everyone loves it.
It's so much better with you around. You're like the Tang. You're the Tang.
That space drink.
You're like the lemon meringue pie, the lemony, like tangy flavor.
Oh,
that's what you are. Yeah, I'm the meringue.
Meringue is key. It's just a lemon pie. Otherwise,
right? I'm the meringue. I'm fluffy.
No, but it's like beautiful. You like brown it a little on the top.
Yeah.
It makes it look pro.
That's true. Yeah, because I'm ethnic that way. In any case, whatever.
This is a great start to the show.
Love you guys. So great to be with you. It was great to be with Rabbi Mike. Malka, one of my favorite, our favorite, one of our favorite holidays tonight in Israel.
Tonight.
Brings it all together, Malka. We did Yom Ha'atzmaut, where we celebrated the foundation of Israel, back to family, never again to being Jewish injured. We have an army now. We have a Hebrew language. We have Hebrew culture and economy. That's Yom Ha'atzmaut. We did Lag BaOmer this year. We did it here on the porch with our good friends, the Rabbi Liad Brody and Dina. And we had a great time because that was celebrating what we celebrate in Lag BaOmer, which is the return to Torah, the return to the mystical doctrines, the return to the land of Israel in a spiritual sense. That's the Arizal, reawakening the spirit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's the end of the exile and back to the Torah of the land of Israel. We did that. We did Pesach Sheni, which is for Jews who want even more.
Yes, we did Pesach. I was proud. We did a good high five.
You did a Pesach Sheni.
We did a good Pesach Sheni this year.
And now
I bought, maybe some of you will recall from previous shows when we talked about grocery shopping during coronavirus.
Yeah.
And what I felt when I found the matzah in the grocery store. the incredible sense of relief because this corona stuff was all like hitting the fan right as Pesach was coming.
Paper
and I was really scared.
Toilet paper was not something.
Yeah, I was like, if I have enough matzah, I'll know what to do with it.
Right.
But I was just like, I need the matzah. And I went a little nuts. Worst and I bought more matzah than what we need. I still have matzah, basically.
We had old copies of the New York Times we could have used for toilet paper. But
yeah, Hamas
matzah
newsletter. A few hot aretzes.
That's right. No problem. But matzah was key. You had the matzah you brought it out.
I brought it out.
On P2, Pesach Sheni.
P2, and we ate it at dinner. And then again, at breakfast, we got the matzah bread.
Right. So that was Pesach Sheni. Now, Yom Yerushalayim, where it comes together, the Jewish people in the land. It was the completion of the 1948 war. You know what?
What?
I used to say... The Six-Day War, and I heard this somewhere else, and I can't remember sadly who
all
said
right,
it.
That's okay.
But I heard that the Six-Day War was the completion of the 1948 war, right?
Okay.
But then again, I realize now that we haven't completed it.
No.
Because we're still fighting for that same land.
We're 100% still fighting the
war still fighting
for the independence
same,
of Israel.
And for that very land that we won.
And the war, I dare say, is more katlani, as they say, is a little bit
deadly.
more high stakes.
Right.
Well, I don't know if it's more because the truth is deadly.
That's what Cutlany
is. I think the truth is that I'm probably exaggerating because I don't think the stakes are higher today. I think that Israel is so well established. Tfu, tfu, tfu.
Baruch Hashem.
I think that Israel is so well established that we're not at the same stakes, whereas in 1967, it really could have been just the overrun of the country.
You're right.
So I don't think that we're at the same stakes, but I think that the stakes have maybe gone wider, perhaps, like out a little bit more. I think that now we have the whole world has always been interested kind of with the outcome of what happens here in this tiny little swath of land. But I think even more so now, I think that the world is really like getting itself involved. And it's really there's a lot of sides taking and like the allies and alliances are like lining up in different formations.
You're right. So I want to take you back 3 years to Yom Yerushalayim that we had about 3 years ago. And I'll never forget it because in the morning of Yom Yerushalayim, I was going to go up to the Temple Mount. And I went up to the Temple Mount, got there a little late, and we were one of the last groups. And I was there with some French Jews.
Okay.
And they told us, bad news, you were going to let you up on the Temple Mount, but we're only going to give you the short walk around, which is like 5 minutes, supposed to like 40
minutes. Instead of going all the way around, you get like a one side pass on the Temple Mount.
So the French Jews that were with me were, shall we say, not pushovers.
Okay. Oh, I think I know
so
where this is. I think I remember.
We're on the Temple Mount, and I'm doing a Facebook Live.
Yes.
When suddenly I hear the first bars, Kolod Balevav.
Of these French Jews.
These French. Kolod Balevav.
That is not an accurate account of what happened.
No,
that's
and
fine.
I hear these bars, and that's some of the people in my group. And so this was very, very fast, and my eye caught it, okay? Here's what happened. First thing what happened was those three, Kolobaleva, Pe. In that exact moment, now, we were surrounded by Israeli police. That was the first ring. And
right,
a
and
ring
that's
around
normal.
That, right,
yeah.
And the ring around that were like three or four Waqf, Islamic Trust guards or you know little mashkiach waqf guys so the police that were around us, this was very interesting. So there's the kolod, but the police turn to face the waqf and they go boom, they just push them in the chest. And just people are flying. They're just flying backwards because they started yelling at the Jews. They're like, oh no. The police turn around.
And it starts a scene, a whole huge scene up there.
Right. And they just go bang and these WAQF guys go flying backwards. Within a second.
All worth it right there.
This is all in quarter of seconds, okay? Within a second after that, they turn to us.
Right.
And they grab us by the whatever. I don't know what they grab me by. Because within a second, I found myself being horizontal, flying horizontally, still filming. And I'm like, I wasn't even doing anything. But within a second, I was like flying in the air this way. And within within another second, yeah. I was outside of the temple. Yeah. I had been
picked
up.
Wait, you forgot that one guy. Right,
and as we're just leaving,
yeah,
as we're like on the footsteps of the edge of the Temple Mount, this squat Jew, he was not fat. He was wide.
Stocky.
Young Jew. Young guy.
Yeah.
A guy who like works in building. A guy who
works with his hands.
Guy's got big old shoulders.
All right.
A wide
God bless
top,
him. Yes.
You know?
A modern Jew. Yes.
He just goes drop and he falls down bowing on the
prostrating
temple
himself.
Prostrating himself.
Which is illegal.
It took four men to like get, he was a big old guy and he was down on the floor on the Temple Mount prostrating his to the God Most High, you know? And they took another four police officers. They didn't arrest him, by the way. They just picked him up and chucked him.
Yeah, they
he went horizontal next to me. I saw them like whew, fine. Interestingly enough, this was interesting. Nobody really got hurt. That was very interesting.
Huh, I feel like there would be some sprains or something.
They weren't gentle, but they weren't rough. They just chucked us off the Temple Mount. And they did rough up one walk guy who was starting
like
a riot,
bleeding, yeah.
And they took him, they had him arrested, and they held him in like a
like
type
a
of wrestling
grip.
Move, yeah, a funky grip, and we're taking him out to get
wow.
arrested.
And
I was
then
like,
"What happened?
That's it." Then we sang some songs and
outside
and,
the temple,
yeah, outside
like
temple
off the Temple Mount.
And that was it. It wasn't even so protesty because it wasn't like a violent protest. It was just like a few bars of kol of the tikva. Anyway, so I was like, "Wow, that's crazy." Yom Yerushalayim Babokir,
right.
In the morning, I get thrown off the Temple Mount, and I'm like, and
first
I was like,
"You were on the Temple Mount."
I was on Temple Mount, like, good for me. Next thing I know, I'm off the Temple Mount, and I'm like, "Huh." But the reason that I was kicked off is because a few French Jews sang the Tikva on the Temple
right,
Mount,
which is the national why anthem
the police,
of the country that
right,
is in charge of.
Why
this
would
place?
The police kick me out? Is it so weird that the police are upholding the laws of the jihad?
Right,
which is and I saw,
and of course there's always the embarrassment that we like gave any kind of authority whatsoever to the waqf to
right, and that Jews are getting kicked off
right
for something
it's,
that
it
the
was
waqf
such
wants.
A it's such a mistake is not the word it was right. like I guess it was a divine decree right?
Right,
but it was like it was so bad and continues to be so bad today that it's like just dealing with that is hard.
That night it's not the end of the story. That night you and I were invited to a funky, high-level barbecue at a very wealthy person's house.
Oh, it's my 1 year. It's my anniversary of this barbecue.
No, that's a different barbecue. Same place.
Yeah, same place.
But you were
different
invited.
Barbecue.
We were invited.
Yeah.
And we decided to go a shortcut through East Jerusalem, very, very Arab part of East
Jerusalem.
Ah,
yes.
And we're sitting
wait,
in traffic.
Wait, was that the same Yom Yerushalayim?
Same Yom
wow,
Yerushalayim.
Wow.
So suddenly we're in traffic. In a very, very Arab part. When I say very, very, I mean a place that there's no Israeli
you won't
police.
Be seeing
Israeli security.
Any Israelis.
Suddenly, we're in our Subaru, or is that how you say it in English?
Subaru.
Right,
in Israel, it's Subaru.
Right.
Right.
I bet you that's Ryder. Subaru. Okay. Anyway, so we're sitting in traffic when I hear knock, and then knock on the car, and the
we
front
had a
back,
baby in the car.
Oh, we did.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot that. Those knocks. Were actually rocks that begin a hail of rocks that began to be thrown, and suddenly I hear a whack. And that whack was a rock that was thrown at our Subaru, hitting the window, the closed window,
right
where you were sitting, exactly where your head was,
like right at temple
right, like,
area,
like somebody threw
like
that
very
rock
accurate.
To kill. Now it happens to be that we had rock-proof windows,
Baruch Hashem,
and later on I saw what a chip.
Like a chink.
Little chink was made, and I realized that had that window been glass or had that window been open, you would have been finished, okay? You would have been in a lot of trouble, and we would have been in a lot of trouble. Happens to be that I realized the situation. I couldn't go out there and fight. That was just totally impossible because
we
of
had
the,
we had your
baby,
family in the car.
We were, you know, so.
And it was like a huge.
Right. So you remember what I did?
Yeah.
I hit the gas.
Yeah,
went
and we
into
drove
the,
out of there.
Yeah, but I drove into the oncoming traffic.
Right.
With
and
aggressiveness.
Stop them, yeah.
Yeah. With
and we got out of there.
Right. We got out of there.
And we went to a barbecue.
And we went to a big barbecue in which we heard Shabbat Yerushalayim.
Oh, man. It was so.
Remember he did Shema Israel. He did the whole thing right in front of the Temple
oh,
Mount.
Oh, that was so good.
Right. But so.
What's his name? Kobe Sela or something? What's the name of that guy?
I don't remember. But the point is he's a singer in Israel. But the point is he's a sweet singer in Israel. But the point is that Yom Yerushalayim, it was like on the one hand, it was like, yes, I'm here. On the other hand, clearly,
like we have not We cannot claim victory just yet.
Right. We're still very much fighting for Jerusalem and right. very much fighting for our land.
It's very, very true. And part of that battle is this discussion today about the application of sovereignty over Judea and Samaria.
Right.
You know, we talk about Jerusalem Day.
What other people may call annexation.
Right, annexation. Of course, we remember that in 1967, when Jerusalem was reunified with the Jewish people, so was Hebron, and so was all the rest of Judea and Samaria, the ancient biblical heartland, yeah. our old stomping grounds. And now the world is talking about whether the Jews should have the right to control of this land.
Wait,
official capacity.
Wait, you said something.
What?
Which I got to take beef with.
No.
You said the world.
Okay.
The world.
Yes.
The world.
The world.
The whole world?
What?
The world is against us?
I didn't say. They're discussing it, I said.
Okay, but
I didn't say the whole world was against us. In fact, only most of the world is against us, okay? The reality is that we have some very interesting friends in this issue. First, we have the United States of America, which, you know, there's the American elections are coming up and there's such a debate as to whether Israel should do this application of sovereignty now because Trump might lose. Incidentally, I don't even understand why we would wait at all for any reason, even if Trump is going to be president of the United States for the next 100 years. I don't understand why we wait another 5 minutes. Let's do it now.
Right.
Because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
But okay, there are people who say we got to do this now because we don't know if Trump is going to win. And if it's Biden, we can't do it. Right. But really and truly, the United States, there have been different leaders of the United States who've had different policies. But the people of the United States have always been pretty unequivocal about their support for Israel. And certainly in the Congress and in the Senate, there's always been support amongst the people. For Israel. So we have the United States on our side. Who do we not seemingly have on our side? The European Union. By the way, good call, UK. I just want to say that was a good move on your part.
Yeah, drop that like a hot potato.
Yeah, seriously. Bye. Okay? It's like you do not want to be a part of that organization. The EU, of course, having nothing else to do.
How do we call the EU in this house?
EU. The EU having nothing else to do with itself because there's no like pandemics. There's certainly no terror threat. There's no economic problems going on in the EU. They have lots and lots of time. So they're taking their time to get together meetings at the UN Security Council to condemn Israel for its basically everyone knows that Israel's moving forward towards this plan to apply sovereignty to officially, meaning to say like we have control now. Over these areas in large part. The army's here, electricity and water is here, the internet's here, post office is here, the schools, you know, national school system, everything is normalized here, except that we haven't officially said this is like regular Israel. This is the same as Ramat Gan, the same as Afula, and it hasn't gotten the same recognition that like the Golan Heights has gotten also in the north. So the EU, led by High Representative for High Representative for Foreign Affairs, Josep Borrell, this week came out with a spicy condemnation of Israel. Released the third.
Is that like spicy ketchup?
Spicy ketchup is good. This guy is spicy.
That's
EU
a spicy
guy.
Condiment.
Right.
Okay. Sorry. I got you.
Oh, that was funny. Good for you. Okay. So this is the third time that this guy, Borrell, has come out with a statement criticizing Israel in his own name. And the reason he has to do it is because he can't get the unanimous agreement of the United Nations to get behind him because there's 25 of 27 EU states who agree with him, right? Who are ready or signing on to his condemnations. Here's the condemnation, by the way. Let's read it. It's short. We strongly urge Israel to refrain from any unilateral decision that would lead to the annexation of any occupied Palestinian territory and would be, as such, contrary to capital I, international, capital L law, right? International law. 25 states signed on to this. And again, way to go, UK.
Who else signed on it?
Everybody.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Except for two countries.
Go, go, go.
This is interesting, and we could write a whole PhD paper about this,
yes,
probably.
Yes.
Those countries are called Austria and Hungary.
Yep.
Two Axis power countries.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, Germany, totally fine. Okay? Totally fine with this condemnation. But what happened basically?
Germany, shame on you. Ichsa on you.
Right. Ichsa on Germany.
Shame on you.
For years I've been angry at you.
What is your stinking problem? What is wrong with you? God, I keep telling this to Germans. They're just like, they look at me like.
Because they can't. They're not going to lie. They're not going to lie.
They look at me. They see.
But the Austrians, like, I want to understand what that is. I want to understand why the Austrians have gone.
Sebastian Kurz. They became.
Wait. So Austria. Wait a second, because Austria is going to come up more in the news here right now that I'm going to talk about. Right. Okay. So at first, it says that Austrian Foreign Minister Alexander Schallenberg said his country rejects prejudice against Israel. What else? In Hungary. Wait. Was that the Hungarian one? Sorry. No, that's the Austrian one. A Hungarian diplomat said, "We call for a gradual approach of caution, not rushing forward, and certainly not alienating Israel. We believe Israel is a really important strategic partner in the Mediterranean region."
Mm-hmm.
So that can explain some of that. France, of course, has a lot to say. They say French ambassador to the UN, Nicolas de Riviere, said that if Israel applies sovereignty or what they call annexation, it would not be without consequences to the EU relationship with Israel. He said it would be detrimental to Israel's role in the world, to its integration in its regional environment, as well as to Israel's relationships with its partners.
Right.
So that's France. Wait, so there's more. There's more about Hungary. So that's what's going on with the EU. Another EU story. I wanted to talk about the EU today. Another EU story. Here's a headline. EU official urges probe ensuring no funds benefit Palestinian terror backers. Now, when I first read this, the headline, I laughed out loud. I actually LOL'd because I was like, give me a break. Like, you guys are all college educated, right? And you guys read the news and you guys also get classified information and stuff like that. You don't know? Like, here, it's like common knowledge on the streets of Israel that there's this thing called pay for slay, what we call here pay for slay, which is that terror criminals who are sitting in Israeli jails are getting salaries, people who were killed while you know, attacking Jews and trying to, you know, slit their throats. Their moms are getting monthly salaries. It's like, how could you even, and what? The Palestinian Authority is constantly complaining that it has no money. We have no money. There's no money. We're about to go bankrupt. You got to help us. There's no money. The EU passed like a $72 million coronavirus relief package, I remember, something like a month ago. In the meantime, there's only like 350 cases of coronavirus in the whole Palestinian Authority and Gaza. So it's all like, it's so thinly veiled that they send their money into the PA knowing full well that they're like just sending the money infusions and that obviously they know where it goes. So when I first saw this, I was like, this is ridiculous. I just thought it was so funny. But then I read the story and I looked a little deeper and I was kind of proud. Here we have the EU Commissioner for Neighborhood and Enlargement said this during a meeting of the European Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee. We have received a number of requests from the Israeli authorities, also from the Israeli public, regarding the fact that money is being used for terrorism or terror-related issues. So he says, I took immediate action. I asked both the heads of...
Immediate action.
Wait, hang on. Yeah. So yeah, it's like for decades, right?
Right,
but okay.
Right.
So wait, we're going to get deeper into the story. I took immediate action. I asked both the heads of delegations in Tel Aviv, but also in the West Bank and Gaza to look into the matter. They will have to look deep. And if there's any concern, we will act immediately. Now, who is the person who said this? His name is Oliver Varhei. I'm not going to say it correctly. He is Hungarian, former Hungarian ambassador to the EU, and he's known as a supporter of Israel. Basically, earlier this month, there was an argument between Brussels and Jerusalem over EU funding of terrorism. After the EU bloc's envoy to the Palestinian territories sent a letter that said sorry, my computer just jumped, sent a letter that said individuals affiliated with or supportive of terrorist organizations are not automatically ineligible for EU support. They're like, listen, terrorism, it's not good.
It's freedom fighting.
But if it's you guys, we can make, you know, we can make an exception. So then on May 7th, Israel's foreign ministry summoned the EU ambassador in Israel and was like, what the heck is this? And they were like, they issued a big condemnation. Based on that condemnation, this Hungarian representative was like, okay. And he basically ordered a huge inquiry. And the inquiry, now, I don't know what's going to happen with the inquiry, right? And I don't know who's going to do the inquiry. But basically, he was like, get in there and like go through all the books. And I want to see where the money is going. And if the money is going, if we can show that the money is going to terror organizations, we're gonna end financial support.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that's real. Right. And as you can see from the from the last story where 25 of 27 EU countries had something to say about Israel taking over like a few miles of land in the Middle East, then you can know that there will probably be a lot of opposition in the EU to doing this kind of inquiry or to following up on this inquiry. But I thought it was interesting that the Hungarian delegate was just like, I'm taking this on myself. And he
right.
hit the ground now, and now, started to run.
Just very quickly, I want to talk about Hungary for just a second. The Hungarians were not known as great Jew lovers. They were not known as that. They were known as in fact, anti-Semitic
right.
and had a lot of cooperation with, they had their own Nazi party called the Arrow Cross, and they were weren't seen as very sympathetic to the Jews at all. And when you speak to Hungarians, they don't have a lot of great things to say about Hungarian Jews. They don't have a lot of great things to say about Hungary in terms of how to treat them. But you know what the truth is? I'm going to say something that's going to sound a little funny. First thing is, there's a difference between anti-Semitism and xenophobia, I've come to believe. I've come to believe that there are some countries that are just xenophobic in their right. way.
They don't want anybody.
They don't want anybody. And they don't like Jews, and they don't like Muslims. They don't like other things. What do they like? Nation states, ethnic, national, and nation
they're
states.
Nationalists, really. They're nationalists. You don't necessarily have to say they're xenophobes.
Right, but they might be, in the sense, xenophobic because they don't want
they
other
choose
people.
Them, not others.
They don't want other people to live amongst them. And it right. turns out that Hungary, I think, turns out to be like that. They basically don't like others living in their land. But that doesn't mean they don't respect the Jewish state by itself out there.
Right, or can't work together.
Right.
They can cooperate.
Or says, oh, look at that. This is a strategic partner for us today because we have a problem with the Muslims. We have a problem with the Muslim influx. We don't want it. We want to stop it. We want to stop it from coming to Europe and certainly to Hungary. And Israel looks like it's a country that knows how to push back on these things. So they're a strategic partner. They're like us now. They're an ethnic national state like we are. That's very interesting. It's an interesting phenomenon. I said to somebody the other day, it's related, not exactly. I said to him, don't forget that not liking Jews is not the same as anti-Semitism. We were talking actually about Lord Balfour. Arthur Balfour, who had some statements that weren't very pro-Jewish. He didn't. And I said to him, there's a difference between not liking Jews and being anti-Semitic. But in any case, that, of course, does not absolve the crimes of World War II.
Right.
But, hey, you know what I mean? Today we need strategic partners. In that
today we live in today.
Right.
And if they want to make, you know, some kind of overtures toward Israel that are in our support and help us to grow and help us to move forward, then I appreciate that.
You know what? You know what? I'll take Hungary's support of Israel today, and I'll be like, okay, at least they're rectifying some of the
sins. A little bit, something.
As opposed to the German payout of monies that they stole, which they've paid back about one fingernail's worth, and instead their condemnation of Israel today, which is, in my mind, nothing but the furtherance and continuation of what they did in World War II. Okay? So to me, you know, you could sell us all the Mercedes and submarines that you want, okay? And that's good. I appreciate that. But if you're still out there on the side of evil and you're telling Israel what to do, including not to live in Judea, for shame. For shame, Germany. You got a real mental problem, Germany. Really, you got a real issue. There's something in your psyche that you got to fix in there, okay? Because there's something sick about a people who did what they did in World War II that cannot just...
not just to us.
Not just us. And I always say to Germans, here's the answer. Step off. Don't...
Right, you're Switzerland.
Right.
Oh, we just, it's Israel, it's the Jews, we just have nothing to say about right. it. We what's the word when you don't
we're
vote?
Neutral.
We abstain. We abstain.
Right, it's Israel. We have a tough history. It's Israel.
Right.
Exactly.
We've decided for 100 years that we're abstaining on all things.
On all Israel issues.
Israel.
It's like, have some, my God, like some shame, for God's sakes. It sickens me. I can't explain it. It's just like, it guile. Is that a word, guile? Or no, not, it's.
I don't know. Something angry and bad.
Yeah. I'm sure my friend Eric would know what word I mean right now. In any case, Malka Fleischer, we're coming out of Corona.
Yep.
Baruch Hashem.
Baruch
Thank you, Hashem.
Baruch Hashem, and may Hashem protect and bless all of you out there, that you should be totally, completely healthy always.
I want to wish three wishes. One, for all the people who are still sick.
Yes.
Or know
you
somebody
be
is
healthy.
Sick.
You should be healthy.
Briut. For anybody who lost somebody, I want to really wish you, Neshama should have an aliyah.
You should
and,
be comforted.
And comforted amongst the mourners of Zion. And we send you our what's the English word, our comforts from Israel. And to all those who missed their bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs,
aww,
weddings, celebrations, your birthdays, that you missed something.
Right.
I want to really wish you also a mazal tov.
Yes.
And I know that you missed your fun times. And then
but
I,
no, Hashem is always watching.
Right.
You're going to get your fun times.
Right. And I just want to wish you like a mazal tov. And then lastly, I just want to say to all of you who are still stuck outside the land of Israel, El Al just said that they're still not, they're
right,
still
they're
delaying.
They're pushing off their restart date.
I just want to wish everybody that has not been able to come to the land of Israel or feels disconnected, lots of blessings from here, from the land of blessings.
Yes.
And to feel that you are connected and you'll get here soon, Bezrat Hashem. I just want to throw all those wishes out. For us here in Israel, there's a sense of relief. Cautious relief. Synagogues are slowly opening up, including the Chabad house downstairs has opened up partially with all the limitations.
Right, you got to distance by 2 meters.
Distance.
You got to wear a mask.
Wear a mask.
You're only supposed to have like 50, it depends on the size of the shul, but either 50 or 100 people. No, 50, I think.
Yep, 50.
50 people inside a shul, something
right,
like that.
Right. And you have to also put on deodorant, but that's.
That's something you should
That's
always
something
do.
You should always do.
But it doesn't have to be the aluminum-based ones. It
right.
could be natural.
Right. And just try to smell nice for other people. That's just a general thing. In any case, so there's that. And tonight, Malka, Yom Yerushalayim, this amazing holiday.
Yes.
And soon, a week away, a holy week away, the last week of this count. Let's make the count count. Okay? Make it count by really doing some teshuvah this week, some repentance.
Yes.
Some Torah learning. Get ready for Shavuot, Malka. I know that for the past many weeks, you've been considering what to.
I know it's so scary.
What's the word? Culinary creations.
Yeah, I don't know.
You will concoct.
I don't know what to. I'm still not totally set. And now we're in crunch time.
We are in crunch time.
Maybe like crunch bar time. I don't know.
Maybe Shavuot's taco.
Like a dairy taco.
Yeah. With yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe to redo the quesadillas. Are you in the mood for quesadillas?
I'll tell you the truth. Honestly, it's afternoon here in Israel, and I didn't eat so much today. So like
I didn't
everything,
make you your big breakfast that I usually
Everything
make.
Sounds amazing right now. I'm really hungry. Everything is like, I'm like, quesadilla, good.
But I want people out there to let me know what they're making for Shavuot.
Right, right, absolutely.
This is so key for me.
Yes.
We could share. We could help each other.
Yes.
Please let me know. Is there something special that you make every Shavuos? Is there some special game you play or something special that you do in your home for Shavuot?
Yeah.
Or in your community? I would love to know. Please share. And then if there are some particularly awesome ones, then we'll share them on next week's Shavuot show.
Hashtag Shavuot recipe.
Yes.
Hashtag Shavuot recipe. If you write hashtag Shavuot recipe, that means that you have listened to the show and that you're part of it. Speaking of listening to the show, Malka, on the yishaifleischer.com/donate page, we have a new system in place that also allows you to do Google Pay.
Wow.
And also allows you just use a plain credit card without PayPal, but certainly PayPal is there as well.
Great.
And you can make a recurring donations. And recurring donations.
Our donors are our lifeblood.
Absolutely. It makes such a difference.
And we want to thank you so much, and we really want to bless you so much that the messages that you care about, that you want to get out to the world, really do in your merit.
Do you know that feeling that you just got when you heard me ask for donations and you're like, yeah, I should give something? Remember that feeling till when the drive of the car is over. Just do that. just go for that.
No one's in their car. People are like, what do you mean car?
Oh, not in the car. Wherever
you
are. You
mean like when you walk from the kitchen back
right.
over to your room.
Or when you're outside taking a walk. Wherever you are, you make it happen. And you know what we really appreciate? Recurring donations. Recurring donations make a big difference. Like, you know, start with from $18 to $1,800 a month.
Yes, I'm in.
It makes
why limit them?
That's right. No, really. I meant that, you know, advad bichlal.
As many zeros as you want toward the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Help us out. And we're going to start sending stuff out to
yes,
our donors.
Yes, we're
going to
send them treats
right.
and fun stuff.
That's right. Absolutely. And we love our donors so much. Thank you so much. And those who don't donate, it's also okay.
Yes, you just keep listening.
Yeah, keep listening. And
we're happy you're here.
But you can donate a different way. You could donate a thumbs up. You can donate a 5-star review.
That's big.
you can
share on your social media.
Share it social media. Sign up for our weekly email.
And sending us an email. We love your emails.
Oh my gosh, I love your email. It's like
I wish you would read more email on the show.
I got some great emails recently, and I will share them. So please write me an email, yeshai@yeshaifleisher.com or yeshai@thelandofisrael.com, basically where you get where you feel more connected, yeshai@yeshaifleisher.com, yeshai@thelandofisrael.com. We love our network, the Land of Israel Network, with great other shows, including the fantastic Jeremy Kempel and wife, Tehila, who's been putting
She's
out
hilarious.
Some great shows recently. And more and more great shows. Josh Haston, Eve Harrow, Gil Hoffman, sometimes Shlomo Katz, Ari Abramowitz, of course. Great folks who put out beautiful stuff. So our network is growing, and you are part of it wherever you are. Yom Yerushalayim is so very special. I can't really... I want everybody to do the following thing. Malka,
yeah.
Here's my request.
Okay.
I want you to have a bottle of wine from the Land of Israel.
I don't know. Too hard.
Not hard. It's in your store. And if not, if you don't have a bottle of wine from the Land of Israel, then do you have anything like a Beasley, a Bamba, anything? What do you have from the Land of Israel? If let's say you don't have something, do you have a rock? Do you have a picture that you took? Do you have something from the Land of Israel? I don't know. Maybe you have a old sandal. Or or one
sandal.
Of those. One of those.
What do you want them to do with their old sandal?
I want them to hold it in one hand. And then a cup of wine, hopefully from the Land of Israel, if not, a beer from Belgium, or a cup of water from your sink. And I want you to hold it up, and I want you to say, tonight, L'chaim Yerushalayim. That's all I'm asking for people to say. L'chaim Yerushalayim.
You could also, I wonder, is the webcam of the Kotel still
going?
The
webcam of the Kotel is webbing and camming at the same time. It's doing great, but forget it, Malka. You know what? Whatever you guys want, but I want you to send me a photo, maximally. You can also send just a hashtag, but I want you to send me a photo of you doing, you and your family. It could be impersonal. You could just do your hand. But I want a picture of L'chaim Yerushalayim. That's what
That's
I want.
Nice.
I want L'chaim Yerushalayim. That's all
hashtag
I'm asking
L'chaim
for.
Hashtag L'chaim Yerushalayim.
Hashtag L'chaim Yerushalayim. That's all I'm asking for here.
That's not a lot.
That's not a lot. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show. Malka Fleisher joins me. God bless you, Malka. So, thank
you
so much.
God bless you,
Yishai. Do me a favor, Malka.
Great work. You know, Yishai, you've done so many awesome videos and cool stuff recently. I hope that people will go to your Facebook page and check out. There's all kinds of recordings, and sometimes you do your show with video. And so if you want to see Yishai's shiny little face, then you can watch him on Facebook.
I want to do a L'chaim Yerushalayim video today also.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, folks, thank you so much. I want to thank Moshe Herman, Tabitha, and Ben Bresky for helping get the show out to the world. I want to thank Yerushalayim for hosting us in the Land of Israel, for hosting us in its midst. I want to thank Hashem, God Almighty, for helping us broadcast and project the great light that's coming out from Zion to the world. And I want to thank you and empower you to be part of the story wherever you are. Get excited. Get heated up. The bad guys want to douse water and dirt and garbage on us. We're going to explode away from all that stuff. We're going to shine an amazing light. The light, the rain, the trees, the temple that's coming, the Hebrew language, the economy, the El Al airplane, the Beasley, the Bamba, the falafel, the pregnant women, the hills and valleys of the Land of Israel, the highways and the cars. It's something so amazing and so beautiful, and you are a part of this incredible time. So be excited about it. Be heated up about it. Let's be heated up about it. L'chaim Yerushalayim.
L'chaim Yerushalayim.
Shalom, everybody. God bless you.
You know, there are people who like to do what they're told, and there are people who like to tell others what to do. And then there are people out there who are just wondering what exactly needs to be done. Which one are you? I'm Rav Mike Poyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Poyer on thelandofisrael.com.